time for us to start our last lecture, and this lecture is will be devoted to wave equation. So how to consider the homogeneous wave equation, how to obtain the solutions, and then how to construct the Green's functions for wave equation. We have so far considered the heat equation, then Laplace and Poisson equations that are of parabolic and elliptic type respectively. Now we're going to consider the last remaining equation that is of hyperbolic type, namely wave equation. Wave equation. So it reads like this. Nabla squared phi of x t, yeah, minus 1 over c squared d2 phi x and t divided by d t squared equal to f x comma t. X is the point in the d dimensional space, and t is the time variable. So I will keep the letter c and won't put it equal to 1, so that c plays the role of velocity. As you can see, this equation contains the second derivative with respect to time. And what we're going to start with, we're going to start with the homogeneous wave equation in which the right-hand side is exactly equal to 0. So for homogeneous wave equation, we must specify the initial boundary conditions. Because we have the second derivative with respect to time, we must specify not only the field distribution around space, but also the distribution of the first derivative with respect to time. So for homogeneous wave equation, we have the initial conditions. Initial conditions. Phi is a function of x at the moment of time t equal to 0 will be equal to u naught of x, and d phi, right here, d phi over dt is a function of x at moment of time t equal to 0 is equal to v naught of x. This formula means that we first differentiate phi with respect to time, and only after that we set time equal to 0. So how to obtain the most general solution? Of course, we must Fourier transform. If we consider the infinite dimensional space, the problem in the whole space, and this is what we are going to consider because this is the simplest variant. So Fourier transform. And I will write the following way, phi of x comma t. We will Fourier transform with respect to space coordinates only. So phi of x of t, then u naught of x, v naught of x. And I will put this way in curly brackets all those things. So will be integral over the whole space. Here we have the corresponding Fourier components, phi of k comma t, u naught as a function of wave vector k, and v naught as a function of k. And here e in power minus I k dot x dk over to pi in power t. So we have the distributions u naught of x and v naught of x. Their Fourier components are presumed to be known, and our task is to write down the equation for each Fourier harmonic of the field phi. Each will be the function of time. So what we need to do, we need to substitute the Fourier expansion of phi x comma t into our wave equation. Okay, keeping, of course, the right-hand side equal to zero. So we will have 1 over c squared d2 phi of k comma t dt squared. So each Fourier component is a function of time. It continues to be a function of time. So we differentiate it with respect to time twice. And plus k squared phi of k comma t equal to 0. So this is the second order differential equation with respect to time only. And at this point, we must assume that it has some general solution that we must write down. So the general solution will be, so k acts as a parameter. The most general solution. Is phi of k comma t equal to some constant a that is presumed to be also the function of k in power e I c k t. So here I will write down and explain plus b of k. Here, A depends on the all components of the wave vector k, so we must put the vector here, vector, plus B of, as a function of wave vector k, e in power minus I c k, and I don't put vector here because I imply that whenever k doesn't have the vector sign on top, it means the absolute value. So this k without vector sign on top is the absolute value of k. Why is this? Because we know that k squared can be written as k with vector squared. So this is the convention. Is this thing clear? Because it is important. So we know what the field and its derivative should look like when t is equal to 0. So plugging back into our initial condition this solution, we have phi of k comma naught equal to a of k, wave vector k, plus b of the whole wave vector k. And this must be equal to u naught of k. And the same condition for the first derivative. D phi over dt, function of wave vector k comma naught, equal to. So we first differentiate this whole expression with respect to time, and only then set time equal to 0. I see times absolute value of k, a of wave vector k, minus I c times absolute value of k, b of wave vector k, equal to v naught of k. So this is the system of two algebraic equations that determine the coefficients a of k and b of k. So as a result of solutions, this is just a simple algebra. we obtain our result, A of t equal to 1/2 u naught of k plus 1 over I c absolute value of k times v naught of k, and b of k equal to 1/2 times the bracket. Here you have naught of k, and here we have minus 1 over I c absolute value of k v naught of wave vector k. So excellent. And that's it, because if we substitute A of k and B of k into our free expansion for phi of x and t, one will allow us to write down the most general, applicable in all dimensions, expression for the field phi of x, comma t. Let's do this. Let's write this down. So, and as a result of this, I will take the blue chalk, phi of x, comma t equal to, so 1/2 integral over k space, u naught of k plus u naught of k, divided by I c absolute value of k, e in power I c k t, here absolute value of k, minus I vector k dot vector x, d k over 2 pi in power d, and plus the second term. So this formula is relatively long, so it will take the whole line on the board to write it down. Integral over the whole space, u naught of k minus v naught of k divided by I c k, e in power minus, right, I c absolute value of k times t minus I vector k dot x dk divided by 2 pi in power d. So this is our main formula, and we are going to work with this formula. So this is the most general solution satisfying initial conditions that is valid in all dimensions. Any questions? How we obtained the most general solution for the homogeneous wave equation. You notice that we, yeah.
The equation at the top of the second board, how do you get that from the one before it?
Which one?
The one at the very top left.
Here?
Yeah.
Here, you substitute the Fourier expansion into equation and then differentiate each harmonic under the sign of integral, because Fourier harmonics all are independent, then we must equate to zero the algebraic equation for each Fourier harmonic. This is the standard way to solve linear differential equations. So substitute the expansion over the complete set of orthonormal functions, in our case, Fourier harmonics, and then perform differentiation or other operations under the sign of integral, under the integral itself. So this is the same thing as we did yesterday during the tutorial. This is very general, but it's applicable only for linear equations. Okay. Okay, good. So I will try not to erase this formula because I intend to use this in the future. So a very good exercise that I suggest to do it by yourself. So the solution is in my notes. Okay, but never, it's a very good exercise. So what happens in one dimension? In one dimension, if we look at what stands here, we have e in power ic times the absolute value of k. And here we have minus ik dot x in the form of a scalar product. So in one dimension, if we want to obtain the expression in one dimension, we should remember that in one dimension, vector k is simply the one-dimensional wave vector k that can have both signs, positive and negative, like any coordinate, positive and negative. And here k is the absolute value of k. So it is always positive. So when we have one-dimensional case, then this formula can be transformed into a famous D'Alembert solution. I don't know how to pronounce this name in French, unfortunately. So in one dimension, exercise. In one dimension, the above solution can be written in the form in the following form. Phi is a function of one-dimensional coordinate x and time t equal to 1 half times u naught x plus c t plus u naught x minus c t plus the integral 1 over 2c times the integral between the limits x minus ct and x plus ct of the following function, v naught of xi d xi. This is D'Alembert solution. It's a very good exercise to check that this expression will reduce to this in one dimension. So the solution requires just slightly fewer than 2 pages, and it is in my notes, but I'm not going to present it due to the lack of time. So you see that the solution here looks like two propagating waves, one in positive x direction, and the other is in negative x direction. So if we have initially perturbation at one point, say at x equal to 0, then it will split in two, propagating in positive direction and in negative direction. This is what this solution means. But again, it is applicable in one-dimensional case. So in three-dimensional case, we also have, and even in two-dimensional case, we have similar solutions, but can be obtained only when we have either spherically symmetric waves or cylindrically symmetric waves. So, but we're not going to discuss those things. So, but it's a very good exercise to check that this formula reduces to this. So what we're going to do next instead, we're going to go to Green's function for wave equations. So far, we're dealing with homogeneous wave equations. So what happens if we have something on the in the right-hand side? So f of x comma t. So to obtain the solution that is specific in the presence of external source, we need to have Green's function, right? So then our next question is how to construct Green's function for wave equation. So, okay, since I have space, Green's function for wave equation. So here again, I will write down the expression for the definition of the Green's function in this case. So the equation for Green's function looks like this. Nabla acting on the variable x of the variable x standing in the Green's functions, x minus xi, comma t minus tau, minus 1 over c squared, d2 over dt squared, g x minus xi. Comma t minus tau equal to the product of delta functions, delta x minus xi, delta t minus tau. Yeah.
Could you remind me when exactly you can write the Green's function argument as being a difference between x and xi, for example?
So when in the differential equation, all coefficients before the derivatives do not depend on coordinates or time. Okay. When they're just constants.
Does it include the term in the zero derivative, like a of x times g?
Well, you can contain, the equation can contain just additional constant.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. In this case, this theorem is applicable. I should have probably dwell upon this more on the first lecture, but somehow, yeah, I skip this. So this is also because in the right-hand side, we have delta functions that themselves depend on differences. That's also important. So every definition of Green's function contains the delta functions that depend on the difference. But the solution depends on the difference only when the coefficients are coordinate and time independent in the equation that stands before the derivative. Okay, again, so I think that by now we understand that we can Fourier transform this equation and write down the algebraic equation for every Fourier harmonic. So we again write again, like I did yesterday, g the functions x minus xi, comma t minus tau, and also for the delta function, t minus tau, a function integral over k space, d key, k over 2 pi in power d, times from minus infinity to plus infinity, d omega over 2 pi. Here, for Green's function, we write g as a function of k, comma omega. And for delta functions, for the product of these delta functions, we have simply one. And have here e in power minus I k dot x minus xi times e power minus a omega t minus tau. So if we substitute this expansion here into this equation, we will have So upon substitution, we will have the algebraic equation minus k squared plus omega squared divided by c squared g of k comma omega equal to 1, meaning that g of k comma omega equal to c squared divided by c squared minus omega, divided by omega squared minus c squared k squared. So in order to determine the closed expression for the Green's function itself as a function of x minus xi and t minus tau, we substitute this expression back into the formula for inverse Fourier transform. So we have g x minus xi comma t minus tau equal to integrals dk divided by 2 pi in power d, integral minus infinity to plus infinity d omega divided by 2 pi times c squared omega squared minus c squared k squared e in power minus I k dot x minus xi e in power minus I omega t minus tau. Then the question is what to do next. So when we wrote down similar expression for the heat equation, for the Green's function of the heat equation, we could easily do integration over frequency. And we had the pole that was located in the lower plane and thus obtained the causal Green's function containing theta function. So meaning that the Green's function is itself non-zero only if t minus tau was positive. So what to do in this case? Because if you look at the poles of Green's or at the poles of the integrand omega squared minus c squared k squared, then here you notice that the poles are located at the real axis. So the question is what to do? And the answer is we consider the physics problems in which time runs only in one direction, say positive. And our equation contains the second derivative with respect to time. This means that our equation obeys the symmetry t substituted by minus t. So if you make this substitution, then your solution should look like the same. So this means that we can somehow consider time running in both directions. But in nature, we have time running in one direction. So this means that we have to deal with Green's functions that are causal from the very beginning. So we have to introduce causality somehow by hand. This just means that perturbation will affect the system or solution only at later times. So the cause must precede the consequence, but not vice versa. So we have to somehow obtain the expression for the Green's function that is causal. And there is a way to do this, namely to infinitesimally shift the locations of the poles. Yeah.
Could you say that for the heat equation, for example, because of first order in time, the causality was automatic?
Absolutely.
But in this case, because it's invariant, then we have to put it by hand.
This is what I would like to say exactly. So where are the poles now? They're at the real axis. So this is the complex plane of complex variable frequency. One pole is here. It's minus C times K. And the other pole is here, C times K. What we are going to do, we are going to shift them into the lower plane. So if you remember the heat equation, then the poles were, or the equation that determines Green's function for harmonic oscillator, then we had the poles in the lower plane. And this ensured that Green's function is zero when t minus tau is negative and non-zero when it is positive. So we shift them down a little bit by infinitesimal amount. This is minus I epsilon. And then after the contour integration, put epsilon going to zero. This is an artificial trick, but this trick is basically dictated by the laws of nature. So substitute. Substitute omega by omega plus I epsilon. So here we will write omega plus I epsilon squared minus C squared K squared. This will ensure that the poles will be at plus CK minus I epsilon and minus CK minus I epsilon. Poles will be at plus minus CK minus I epsilon. And this will allow us to do the contour integration over frequency. So the result is integral from minus infinity to infinity d omega divided by 2 pi c squared divided by omega plus I epsilon squared minus C squared K squared E in power minus I omega T minus tau. And this will be minus I C squared 2 C K times E in power minus I C K T minus tau minus E I C K T minus tau times theta function theta T minus tau. So, and we can write this minus theta T minus tau. So times C squared sine C K T minus tau divided by C times absolute value of K. So a minus sign in the Green's function, well, you shouldn't be embarrassed by the minus sign because wave equation is written in this form. First, the derivative with respect to space with positive sign and the second derivative with respect to time has negative sign. Sometimes in the textbooks, you can find the equation written vice versa. So it is written as sometimes 1 over c squared times the second derivative with respect to time minus nabla squared phi. So Minus sign arises because the equation is rewritten in the form it is written. And as a result, so when we substitute, we will get our final expression for the Green's function in the form. So that's g of x minus xi t minus tau equal to minus theta t minus tau integral over k space. And here e in power minus a I k times x minus xi and times c sine. Well, here c squared, here c. So let's cancel one. Sine c k t minus tau divided by k. This is our final expression that is applicable in all dimensions. Yeah. Questions?
Doesn't the minus sign just appear because we have to close it in a clockwise sense, the contour? I mean, because we push the singularities under the real
expression. That's true as well. That's true as well. But if you of course this affects, but the primary reason is because their second derivative with respect to time comes with the minus. If you recall, by the way, the heat equation, then it had the form this form. Here, the time derivative comes with a plus sign, but spatial derivative with the minus sign. I don't know why I wrote in my lecture notes wave equation in this form, but this shouldn't confuse you, because books, textbooks, so they contain all types of notation. You will, by the way, learn from the course of gravity that when you play with curvatures, tensors, you will see 16 possible conventions regarding the signs entering the definition. 16. So, and all 16 are used in all the in different textbooks. So you see them. This is just in the future. So it's a good question where my minus sign comes from, because it may come from different sources. For a variety of reasons, but I hope I answered your question. Okay, so okay. Now, what we're going to do next? What do we want to do? We want somehow to make one step forward, one step above. Why? Because we want still to take care of integration over k, and let's do this for the three-dimensional case and obtain the expression that is the function of x minus xi and t minus tau. Because to leave the expression for the Green's function in the integral form, I cannot say that it is inconvenient, probably depending on the formal function f of the source function f, that it could be convenient to work in this form. But still, let's obtain the closed expression for the Green's function after taking the integral over k, but for the three-dimensional case. Yeah, you can see this expression. So Green's function for three-dimensional case. And here we have to do some algebra that you will find hopefully useful for some other problems. So first of all, let's rewrite the expression above. So in three dimension, what dk over 2 pi and power d will look like. So g of x minus psi comma t minus tau will be given by minus theta t minus tau integral from 0 to infinity. Here we have 2 pi k squared dk over 2 pi cubed integral from 0, sorry, to, from 0 to pi sine theta. We simply introduced the spherical coordinates and wrote down the infinitesimal volume, how it looks like in spherical coordinates. And here we have e in power minus I absolute value of k times absolute value of x minus psi times cosine theta times c sine ck tau my t minus tau divided by k. So theta is the angle between the vector x minus psi and k. So then what we're going to do? It is straightforward to take the integral over theta. It will be equal to, and I will go here, equal to minus theta t minus tau. Let's integrate over theta. Integral from 0 to infinity. And here I will write k squared dk divided by 4 pi squared. And as a result of integration, I have the following: 1 minus I k absolute value of x minus psi. And then in brackets e in power minus I k x minus psi minus e in power I k times absolute value x minus psi times c sine c k t minus tau over k. Right, and we see that we can extract one more sign, right? That this is equal to minus theta of t minus tau. And take x minus psi out of the sign of integral right this way. I'll try to move it a little bit up, a little bit. Divided by absolute value of x minus psi here, integral from 0 to infinity. Again, we can, this k cancels with one of these k in denominator. So it further simplifies. So we have dk divided by 2 pi squared times c sine k x times the absolute value of x minus psi. And I will put dots. So that's the sine here is of this object. Times sine, this sine, ck t minus tau. So such an interesting construction, right? It contains the product of two sines. Very, very good. So we are left with this integral. We must integrate over dk. But the integral from 0 to infinity, and we have here the product of two signs. The question is how to deal with this. And what I will do, I will again use the upper board here and explain what this integral means. Let's work a little bit with the product of two signs. So simply rewrite this product in one particular form, and then I will explain why we did this. From 0 to infinity, integral over k, so simply over k, I'm skipping the necessary prefactors, so sine of k x minus psi times sine ck t minus tau. So here the integral from 0 to infinity, right? But the integrand is symmetric with respect to k. So what we can do, we can write this as 1/2 of integral from minus infinity to infinity of this product sine k x minus psi times sine ck t minus tau. 1/2 d dk, but the integral from minus infinity to infinity. And then I will use the trigonometric formula that represents the product of sine as the difference of cosine of certain arguments. So I will put 1/4 integral from minus infinity to infinity dk. And here I have quite a long object, cosine of k times the absolute value of x minus psi minus ck t minus tau minus cosine of plus of the same thing, k times absolute value of x minus ck plus ck of t minus tau.
Would that work?
Well, I didn't found something. Okay, this is. I will explain. I will explain why. Because let's look at the definition of a delta function. But from the definition of delta function, we have delta of x simply is equal to my integral from minus infinity to infinity. And here we have e in power chi x dk divided by 2 pi. But what is e in power I kx? It's cosine of kx plus I sine of kx. But sine of kx is a not function of k, so there will be no contribution from this. And we can write that this is the integral from minus infinity from cosine of kx dk divided by 2 pi. This means a very simple fact, that we, in fact, as a result of integration over k, will have the difference of two delta functions. So this is equal because of this property this is equal just to the following, equal to, so cosine dk, it is equal to pi over 2 times delta of x absolute value of x minus psi minus c times t minus tau minus delta of absolute value of x minus psi plus c times t minus tau. Any questions here? No, good. That's very, 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 very good that you understand this part. So it's a difference of two, the delta function. So then what do we need to do? We took integration, we performed integration over k, and we need to take this expression and substitute here. But fortunately, there is one more very important simplification. Can anyone tell which one? No, because of this prefect in the form of theta function that is non-zero only when t minus tau is positive. Can anyone looking? Yeah.
It kicks out the second.
Oh, exactly. It kicks out the second delta function. So delta function is not necessary because look, this is absolute value is positive. And this must be necessarily positive because of theta function. So all we need to do, we need to substitute only this expression with the first delta function. And so this is not necessary. Not necessary. Because t minus tau is greater than zero due to theta function. So all we need to do, we need to take the first term and substitute it here and have our final expression in the form minus theta t minus tau times c divided by 4 pi x minus psi times delta of x minus psi minus c t minus tau. This is the expression for the Green's function in three dimensions. In three dimensions. Very interesting expression containing the delta function. So an interesting thing that we also have 4 pi in denominator, if you recall the expression for the Green's function for the Laplace operator. So in the three dimensions yesterday, we also had 4 pi. Well, here we also have 4 pi. It's probably not very surprising. But what is more surprising is the presence of delta function. When we did the integration over all momentum variables, over the whole k space. This presence of delta function definitely has the certain physical meaning when we substitute the Green's function in the formula for the field that is determined by the presence of the external source F. So let's do this. So the field phi of x comma t is equal to minus c divided by 4 pi integral over three-dimensional, in this case, three-dimensional space, because we obtained the expression valid in three dimensions only. So integral over tau. From because tau must be smaller than t, we have from minus infinity to t of delta x minus xi minus c t minus tau f xi comma tau, okay, and this divided by absolute value of x minus psi. Excellent. So what does the presence of this delta function mean? This means that if external perturbation occurs at the moment of time tau and the place given by psi, certain points in the psi space, then it will affect the field phi only in the moment tau plus absolute value of x minus psi divided by c. So and that's very important. So let me write this down. At psi and tau will affect phi at point x only at time tau plus absolute value of x minus psi divided by c. So we can thus eliminate this delta function taking the integral over tau, but at the expense of introducing additional time. Introduce thus tr, yr, equal to t minus x minus psi divided by c. Introduce t with subscript r. R here means retarded, so we introduce the so-called retarded time. So perturbation occurred some time ago, some distance apart, at the moment of time tr, at the previous moment, and it will give us the field, the value of the field at the given space, at the moment of time t, and at place x. If this is the current moment of time and space psi, then perturbation occurring somewhere here will reach the space x in this amount of time. That's why this time is called retarded, meaning that essentially the propagation of signals occurs with speed c. So introducing this, we can eliminate this last delta function and get thus phi of x comma t is equal to minus c divided by 4 pi integral over psi d psi f of psi comma tr divided by x minus psi. And I will specifically put here, like all in the in many textbooks explicitly, that tr depends on both time and psi. X minus psi divided by c. So this is the very famous formula that you probably saw in courses on classical electrodynamics, where people considered the concept of retarded and advanced potential. There, for a given function of f of xi and time, the final expression for potential phi is by no means simple, because tr itself depends on xi. And this considerably complicates the process of integration and obtaining the results in explicit forms. And moreover, this formula, despite its simplicity, opens the direction for quite a good amount of further studies. For example, the questions of electromagnetic radiation. So we have now 10 minutes, for probably a little bit more. And at the very end, I will consider probably remind you. I think that it's always useful to remind you about the Maxwell equation and their solutions in the form of retarded and of retarded potential for scalar potential and vector potential. So this is what I will do during the remaining amount of time. So let me just go here. Application. Maxwell's equations and retarded potentials. So Maxwell's equation read. So these are equations for electromagnetic field written in general in the presence of external sources that can be themselves function of space and time. Charges and currents. Nabla dot vector B minus dE over dt. So B is the magnetic field. E is the electric field is equal to 4 pi times J. Equation one. Then nabla cross E plus dB over dt equal to 0. This is equation two. Then nabla dot E is equal to 4 pi times rho. And nabla, this is equation three. And nabla dot B is equal to 0. These are all four famous Maxwell's equations. So if rho and J are time independent, then we should expect time independent solutions for E and B. And in this case, the equations of electrodynamics reduce to the equations of electro and magnetostatics. So our task is how to obtain their solutions for E and B if J and rho are both spatially and time dependent. So J is the external current, and rho is the distribution of external charges. So people introduce electric and magnetic potentials. So from the, this is the equation four, by the way. From the last equation that reads that nabla dot B equal to 0, we can introduce the so-called vector potential in the form. B is equal to nabla cross A. This will ensure us that if we apply nabla dot to B, then we get identically 0. So A is the vector potential. Also, from the second equation, we have the following from two. We have nabla, then cross E plus d over dt, nabla cross A equal to, I will write this way, nabla cross what stands here, E plus dA over dt, and this is zero. This means that what stands here can be represented in the form of a gradient from some scalar function, and this scalar function is called the scalar potential. So thus, one can write that E plus dA over dt equal to minus gradient of some phi. Phi is the scalar potential. Scalar potential. So as a result, of course, we can write that E is equal to minus gradient of phi. Actually, yeah. So for the phi here is the scalar potential. Don't confuse it with phi entering the wave equation. But we will obtain that the equation for phi will have also the form of the wave equation. Equal to minus nabla gradient of phi minus dA over dt. Nice. So we introduce those potentials and assume that we can express electric and magnetic fields via them. But the potentials are not uniquely determined. They are subject to the so-called gauge invariance. So you will see gauge invariance all the time in all the courses. So that's why we feel that it will be very useful for you if we remind you of Maxwell's equation and how to deal with them. So phi and A are invariant under the following transformation, phi going to phi plus dt with respect to some scalar function lambda that is a function of space and time, and A is invariant under the following transformation, A plus nabla gradient of lambda. So lambda large is a function of lambda x and t. So we have some gauge freedom, and we can use this freedom to impose one more condition that connects vector and scalar potentials. We can impose the so-called Lorentz gauge. Use gauge freedom to impose the constraint that dt Did I write? I wrote potential in this one. So sorry about that. Phi here, phi. Anyway, that if phi, I should have written.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You wrote phi and a are invariant under those transformations. You mean b, e, and b, right?
Well, e and b will be.
Yeah,
E and B, yeah. Yeah, thank you, yeah. Thank you, yeah. E and B, thank you. E and B. Invariant under those gauge transformations. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Of course. So I write phi this way, but anyway, in my notes, I write phi this way, but hopefully that will be okay. So you use gauge freedom to impose the so-called Lorentz gauge. Nabla dot A equal to zero. This is the so-called Lorentz gauge. So if we then substitute expression for E into our third equation, we will have. So substitute E into three, into our equation three, and get nabla dot minus nabla phi minus dA over dt equal to 4 pi rho. So, but if we differentiate with respect to time this Lorentz gauge and eliminate the vector potential from this equation, we will have, so since dt squared phi plus d over dt out of nabla a equal to zero, equal to zero, we will obtain that nabla squared phi minus d2 phi minus d to phi over dt squared is equal to minus 4 pi rho. And this is our equation that contains only the scalar potential. It has the form of the wave equation in the presence of external source that we discovered at the beginning of the lecture. So due to time constraints, I won't derive the equation for the vector potential, but I will just leave it as an exercise. So exercise. Show that the vector potential obeys exactly the same equation. So that nabla squared a minus d2a over dt squared equal to minus 4 pi over g. And these are the equations that have the form of the inhomogeneous wave equations, and the solutions we can be written straightforwardly and will have the form that is exactly the same as we have here. So that's the solutions for phi and A will have the form. And the expressions for E and B can be obtained after that via simple differentiation. For phi and A will have the form. Phi of x comma t, a x comma t, equal to, I will write it this way, the integral over space r n power d, d xi times 1 over x minus xi. The very convenient thing that 4 pi cancels, and in the Maxwell equations I set also c equal to 1. Yeah, c equal to 1. So c is 1, and here I will write rho of x comma tr, a of x comma tr, where tr is the retarded time, tr equal to t minus x minus xi, divided by, thank you, so towards the end of the lecture, j at the moment of time t minus x minus c, I said c equal to 1. These are the expressions, famous expressions for retarded potentials. Any questions? It's where? Right. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much. So that's all. If there are no questions, thank you for your attention. Thank you. So today's tutorial will be devoted to the partial differential equations. So.